I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Donald Trump called for a revolution of common sense in his inaugural speech Monday. The swearing-in of the 47th President of the United States marked his remarkable return to power since losing his second-term bid to Joe Biden in 2020. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadakwasara has this report.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Donald Trump is sworn in as the 47th President of the United States.
So help me God.
Trump comes to power amid continuing conflict in Ukraine and a fragile ceasefire in Gaza.
We will measure our success not only by the battles we win, but also by the wars that we end, and perhaps most importantly, the wars we never get into.
All living presidents attended the inauguration, along with foreign dignitaries from Argentina, China, and Italy, as well as tech billionaires and Trump donors Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and Mark Zuckerberg. Earlier on Monday, outgoing President Joe Biden hosted Trump for morning tea at the White House, despite the harsh words the two men have traded. It's one of many transfer of power traditions. Trump did not participate in any during Biden's 2021 inauguration. Trump has warned of retribution, and minutes before leaving office, Biden pardoned key figures in his administration and family members. Biden has called Trump a threat to democracy. On January 6, 2021, Trump supporters swarmed the Capitol to overturn Biden's 2020 victory. Trump has pledged to pardon some of those convicted. Patsy Wadakwasara, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA News. A wide-ranging series of steps President Trump has promised to beef up security at the southern border began taking effect soon after he was inaugurated Monday. AP correspondent Donna Warner reports.
Just minutes after Trump took the oath of office, migrants who had appointments to enter the U.S. using the app CBP One saw those appointments canceled. CBP One is an online lottery system that gives appointments to 1,450 people each day at 8 border crossings to enter on parole. Trump had said during his inauguration speech that he was declaring a national emergency at the southern border. Even before Trump took the oath of office, the governor of Massachusetts proposed last week that all members of a family staying in emergency shelters would have to be in the country legally. Donna Warder, Washington.
President Trump says he will again withdraw the United States from the landmark Paris Climate Agreement. AP correspondent Haya Pandwani reports.
The move was announced as Trump took office for a second term and is a blow to worldwide efforts to combat global warming and distances the nation from its closest allies. Global efforts to fight climate change stumbled but survived the Republicans' first term as other countries, states, cities, and businesses picked up some of the slack. No other country has withdrawn from the 2015 agreement. Haya Pandwani, Washington.
President Trump appears to be holding off on his threat to issue tariffs on China, Mexico, Canada, and other countries. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
Canadian leaders say they're relieved broad tariffs haven't been applied to Canadian products on Trump's first day in office. However, Trump pledged in his inaugural address that tariffs would be coming and said foreign countries would be paying the trade penalties. Trump had threatened to impose sweeping tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and other trading partners. An incoming White House official on Monday pointed reporters to a Wall Street Journal story saying Trump will only sign a memorandum telling federal officials to study trade issues. Canadian Finance Minister Dominic LeBlanc says having the U.S. study the U.S.-Canada trading relationship is a good thing. I'm Mike Hempen.
Windy and dry conditions returned to Southern California on Monday, raising the risk of new wildfire sparking as firefighters continue to battle two major blazes in the Los Angeles area that started in similar weather nearly 2 weeks ago. Wind gusts could peak at 113 kilometers per hour along the coast and 160 kilometers per hour in the mountains and foothills, and conditions are expected to last through Tuesday. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 21st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Newly sworn in President Donald Trump calls for a revolution of common sense.
I will declare a national emergency at our southern border. And we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came.
We will speak with U.S. Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman for more on the inauguration. An analyst says Africa should probably expect much of the same from the now 47th U.S. president. We will also hear messages from ordinary Africans to the Trump administration. Israelis and Palestinians welcome the beginning of a six-week ceasefire.
Thousands of Israelis watched a giant TV screen in what has come to be known as Hostage Square in Tel Aviv, waiting nervously to see the release of three female hostages from Hamas custody to the Red Cross and then to the Israeli army.
Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Donald Trump called for a revolution of common sense in his inaugural speech on Monday. The swearing-in of the 47th President of the United States marked his remarkable return to power since losing his second-term bid to Joe Biden in 2020. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadekuswara has this report.
Donald John Trump, you solemnly swear.
Donald Trump is sworn in as the 47th president of the United States.
So help me God.
He vowed to fulfill campaign promises and called for a revolution of common sense, including cracking down on illegal immigration.
I will declare a national emergency at our southern border. We will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came. I will send troops to the southern border to repel the disastrous invasion of our country.
As in his 2017 inaugural address, Trump lamented the failures of his predecessor. He promised to slash the federal budget and roll back legal protections for transgender Americans.
As of today, it will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
Trump comes to power amid continuing conflict in Ukraine and a fragile ceasefire in Gaza.
We will measure our success not only by the battles we win, but also by the wars that we end, and perhaps most importantly, the wars we never get into.
He repeated his intention to reclaim control of the Panama Canal.
China is operating the Panama Canal, and we didn't give it to China. We gave it to Panama, and we're taking it back.
All living presidents attended the inauguration, along with foreign dignitaries from Argentina, China, and Italy, as well as tech billionaires and Trump donors Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and Mark Zuckerberg. The inauguration ceremony was moved inside the Capitol due to weather. Not all of Trump's supporters were able to watch from the Capitol One Arena, a nearby indoor stadium. They have high expectations.
Freedom back in our country, safety back in our country, closed borders, and peace through strength in the world.
Earlier on Monday, outgoing President Joe Biden hosted Trump for morning tea at the White House, despite the harsh words the two men have traded. It's one of many transfer of power traditions. Trump did not participate in any during Biden's 2021 inauguration. Trump has warned of retribution, and minutes before leaving office, Biden pardoned key figures in his administration and family members. Biden has called Trump a threat to democracy. On January 6, 2021, Trump supporters swarmed the Capitol to overturn Biden's 2020 victory. Trump has pledged to pardon some of those convicted.
Never again will the immense power of the state be weaponized to persecute political opponents.
Also following tradition, Trump and his Vice President J.D. Vance attended a luncheon with members of Congress. He is entering office with his Republican Party holding the majority in both the Senate and the House of Representatives. Patsy Wadekuswara.
The inauguration of Donald Trump as the 47th president of the United States took place on Monday, January 20th. VOA's Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman covered the event and told me the occasion was historic in style and substance.
Well, the style, for the first time in 40 years, this was an indoor inauguration due to our very chilly weather here, as you know. The wind chill factor, I believe at one point, because I was up on the roof of the Voice of America a little bit earlier, I think it was minus 13 Celsius, and the wind was blowing. So in the interest of safety, all of this got moved inside. So instead of the President of the United States taking the oath of office between up to a couple hundred thousand people, it happened inside the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol, where we had just hundreds witnessing it. That, and then the parade, which normally goes through the streets of Washington, D.C. following the inauguration ceremony, was moved indoors as well. They were able to basically get a hold of the Capital One Arena, where hockey and basketball games are usually played. I think we can safely say about 90% of the people who wanted to witness this parade were not able to, because there's just not enough room inside the arena. And that was pretty much the style. Of course, there were a lot of traditional things that happened.
You mentioned tradition. The whole idea of the peaceful transfer of power was on display.
Yes, and I think we do need to bookmark this compared to what happened 4 years ago, when the outgoing president, who was Donald Trump at that time, did not recognize the victory of the incoming president, who was Joe Biden. In fact, James, 4 years ago today in the morning, I was out at Joint Base Andrews in Maryland and got on Air Force One with Donald Trump to fly down to Florida, because Donald Trump was not at the inauguration of Joe Biden. And so he ended his presidency basically going into the driveway of his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. And today we had the two presidents together, the outgoing and the ingoing. They rode over together from the White House after the ceremonial tea to the U.S. Capitol. And the outgoing president was there standing along with the incoming president.
And all the living presidents.
Yes, all of the living presidents. Unfortunately, Jimmy Carter, who was 100 years old, just recently died. Michelle Obama, however, was not along with former President Barack Obama. But I would say it was very much, as much as these things can be, a bipartisan ceremony at the actual inauguration.
Steve, what are your thoughts on the president's speech?
Well, if you may remember, 8 years ago, Donald Trump gave a speech that's known as the American Carnage speech. That was very dark. And while today's inaugural speech was not as dark as that one, it did have some rhetoric.
Darkness.
Yes, criticizing what Donald Trump called the radical and corrupt establishment, that there had been a continuing catalog of catastrophes under the Biden administration.
VOA's Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. As Africa and the world welcome President Donald Trump's return to the White House, an analyst says the continent should probably expect much of the same from the now 47th U.S. President. Samir Shihata is an associate professor of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of Oklahoma. He tells me that President Trump's inaugural speech focused mostly on domestic issues.
The speech was surprisingly combative. It was very critical of the Biden administration and previous administrations, government generally, and was gloating over the victory of current president, President Trump. So it was surprising in that regard. It was also surprising in its focus almost exclusively on domestic politics and domestic cultural issues, with very little commentary on foreign policy.
Just recently, I've been reading a lot of articles about Africa's, what I would say, concern about what it's going to be like under the new Trump administration.
Yes. President Trump did not mention, really, any country outside the United States. There was no reference whatsoever to Africa. He did talk about the border and a border crisis. And I think, you know, many outside are waiting to see what this means for American foreign policy. They have a sense, of course, from the previous Trump administration and from what he said, the America First idea that there will be no free lunches, that he wants to emphasize America's economic interests. And also, it's quite clear that President Trump has very little regard for ideas of promoting democracy or human rights or rule of law. And I think many outside the United States, particularly autocrats, will look upon that quite favorably because there will be no criticism or pressure put on them to their human rights or policies.
And that's true because recently also I've been reading about how some countries in Africa now have started to crack down on their opponents and even their critics. Normally, a U.S. administration will make adherence to democracy a condition. Do you think that might still happen?
Yes, well, we have to be honest with ourselves. The United States never really made that a condition. It was a talking point. It was a rhetoric that the administrations used. It was how the United States painted itself. That is, the talk of the international rules-based order and democracy and human rights. But when we saw American foreign policy with regard to the horrific Israeli onslaught on Gaza or the abysmal human rights records of American allies in the Middle East and elsewhere, it was really all talk. And so the previous administration did, you know, talk about those issues. I don't think the current administration is going to talk about them at all. So, yes, I think African authoritarian regimes and others are going to feel emboldened to act more freely against their critics under the new Trump administration.
So before I let you go, Professor, this inauguration coincided with the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Your thoughts, because I saw at the end of the inauguration a rendition of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. Your thought on this day?
Well, it was a beautiful rendition. In fact, that was the highlight of the day. It was beautifully delivered and quite moving. And it was President Trump's nod to the idea that today is not only Inauguration Day, it's Martin Luther King Day. But at the same time, you'll recall, he said essentially that he wants to do away with any kind of acknowledgement, history of injustice in this country and diversity and so on. So, you know, the proof is in the execution. I don't think this is going to be an administration that is friendly to African-American rights or African-American empowerment or anything like that.
Samuel Shihata is the Associate Professor of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of Oklahoma. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 21st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. President Donald Trump's return to the White House is sparking renewed hope and some apprehension in Africa. Christopher Isike is the director of the African Center for the Study of the United States at the University of Pretoria. He told VOA's Gina Du Ofor that President Trump's African policies are likely to be transactional.
Trump 2.0, as we like to call it here, it's something that comes with a mixed bag for Africa in terms of expectations and outcomes. For example, his America First policy means that interests and commitments to other countries are secondary to those of the U.S. So it means that relations are going to be based on how they would benefit the U.S. transactional approach to foreign policy that Trump has. So this is going to affect Africa in many ways. For instance, when you talk about the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, the AGOA, it will be something that Trump will use, if at all he keeps it, it will be something we will use transactionally as a political tool to leverage American interests or force American interests out of African actors, as the case may be.
You talk about President Trump's America First policy, but there's an understanding and a growing urgency in Washington of China's influence on the African continent. Do you think this might force the hand of the new administration?
It between, because Trump is very knowledgeable about the threat that China poses to America's hegemony in the world, and it will be a question of whether he values that strategic thinking and need to contain China in Africa much more than his personal idiosyncrasies and feelings about particular African countries. So, for instance, we know that he would not like South Africa very much for the kind of stance it has taken against Israel, which is a major American ally. And of course, with the understanding now that if Israel is found guilty of genocide, nothing is going to stop other countries of the world for asking the ICJ about America's role in the genocide, considering that America is actually financing that war militarily. So Trump can therefore want to try and force South Africa's hands in many ways. But the only restraint, and maybe that's a positive for Africa and South Africa in this context, will be the fact that South Africa is a gateway country to Africa, and South Africa can be a useful country in helping to contain especially China's influence in the continent.
Militarily, and of course in the war against terror, some African countries, especially in the West African subregion, are cooling towards their relationship with the United States. How do you think President Trump will navigate this?
You will recall that in his first term, he did support Nigeria, for example, with military hardware supplies to help to contain the Boko Haram threat. So you would think that he's very interested in that. During his first term, the U.S. maintained a robust counterterrorism presence in Africa and actually targeted not just West Africa, but also the Sahel and the Horn of Africa. So we could see in his second term an increased military support for counterterrorism initiatives. So we know that he has that history of wanting to support anything that's against terrorism. But with respect to these other countries, the ones that have formed the Alliance of Sahel States, one, it will be a mixed bag because, again, like I said, Trump is unpredictable. He seems to like dictators. I think he would eventually understand that America can't simply force its way through to get what it wants done in any region of the world at any time it wants it.
Christopher Isike is the director of the African Center for the Study of the United States at the University of Pretoria. He spoke with VOA's Chinedu Ofuo. Here are some messages from Africa to President Donald Trump.
I look forward to more friendly business terms and policies from his administration in favor of countries in Africa, especially Kenya, especially for our export products, and also ease of issuance of visa, and more so for people that are going for further studies, because it has been a bit hectic.
The elected president, you are a businessman, and we hope this time you will consider better than last time to invest Somalia. We need the American support and the American businesses in Somalia. And I hope that the elected president will prioritize and make very, this time, impact our future, and we will be much closer and friendlier.
I believe he will come in and work in the United States of America and make it a better place.
My name is Onyango Peter from Uganda. I'm a youth leader. Mr. Trump and your administration, please this time think about Africa. Fight for Africa, human rights, and please remove dictatorship in Africa.
My name is Kiki, Eunice Kiki. I'm a Kenyan. I live and work in Uganda. What I would like him and his administration to know about Africa is that there is a lot of opportunities here. If the policies were put there, that the trade would be easy between like the Africans and Americans, because I feel like we have a lot of things to trade, maybe from them, clothes, from here, agricultural stuff.
I would like President Donald Trump and the entire team at least to see that we have a fair and well organized elections.
My name is Kenganzi Even. Ever since I was born, I've been seeing the same president. That's His Excellence Yoweri Kaguta Museveni. He was there where my mom was born as well. So as an incoming president of America, I think, okay, like the U.S. has a lot of power. I think it would help us achieve that in our country as well. So we get to test and get different leaders, not one leader for a long time. Yeah, we also want to get other leaders.
some messages of some of the Africans to U.S. President Donald Trump, there was relief and happiness for both Israelis and Palestinians as a planned six-week ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas began on Sunday. Hamas released three female hostages, and Israel freed 90 Palestinian prisoners. Many Israelis credit incoming U.S. President Donald Trump with achieving the deal. Linda Grastein reports for VOA from Tel Aviv.
Thousands of Israelis watched a giant TV screen in what has come to be known as Hostage Square in Tel Aviv, waiting nervously to see the release of three female hostages from Hamas custody to the Red Cross and then to the Israeli army. The crowd cheered as the three young women, appearing in relatively good condition, reunited with their families. They will spend at least the next 4 days in the hospital resting from their ordeal of 471 days in Hamas captivity. One of the hostages, Emily Damari, who is a joint British-Israeli citizen, said in a statement that she is the happiest person in the world to be free. Amit Susana is a former hostage who was released in the only other ceasefire deal. She is from the same Kfar Aza kibbutz as two of the newly freed hostages. At a Hostage Square rally the night before, she thanked U.S. Presidents Biden and Trump for their mediation in reaching a deal.
Your leadership and commitment have been instrumental in reaching this crucial step. However, we urge you to continue your efforts in ensuring the completion of the second phase of the deal.
A total of 33 Israeli hostages, alive and dead, are expected to be released during the first six-week phase of the deal. During this time, negotiators will work on the second phase, which calls for a permanent ceasefire, the release of the 65 remaining hostages, and a complete Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. Many of the families of hostages worry that if the deal collapses before the second phase, the remaining hostages could be lost forever in Gaza. Omri Lifshitz's 84-year-old father is among the 33 hostages due to be released in the first phase.
First phase is 33, and we need them all back, so we're going to fight for the second phase. We hope President Trump will keep push to end this war and push for the deal to go to second phase.
Together with the release of the first three Israeli hostages, Israel freed 90 West Bank Palestinian women and minors from Israeli jails. Under the terms of the ceasefire and hostage release deal, Israel will free about 1,900 Palestinian prisoners, some of them serving life sentences for murdering Israelis. Hanan Ma'alwani is one of those who were released.
Our joy is incomplete because of what happened to the people of Gaza and their martyrs, and because of the female prisoners who remained behind us in prison.
Analysts caution that there is still a long way to go before the war officially ends and all hostages are freed. They say that beyond the initial euphoria, the next 6 weeks are likely to be a time of increased tension in Israel and the West Bank. The Israeli public is divided about the dangers of ending the war and releasing so many Palestinians with blood on their hands. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Tel Aviv.
Tanzania's president says one sample from a remote northern part of the country has tested positive for the Marburg disease. The Associated Press reports that President Samia Suluhu Hassan spoke in Tanzanian capital Dodoma alongside World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. The WHO was the first to report on January 14 a suspected outbreak of Marburg that had killed 8 people in Tanzania's Kagera region. And that's it for this Tuesday, January 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying thank you for listening.